Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, March 20th. This is your boy, Matt Shook. I'm an AP writer out here in Chicago, covers the NBA, and also a Pistons follower my entire life, been a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today we're going to be talking about a little escape from the Pistons season to talk about some Red Wings glory days. Yes, we're going to be talking about the Russian Five a little bit in addition to some Pistons talk. I'm going to be talking about Monday's win against the Sacramento Kings and also look ahead to Tuesday against the Phoenix Suns a little bit. And we're going to have an interview with Keith Gave, a former Detroit Free Press writer that you probably remember. He has a fascinating book coming out today about the Detroit Red Wings Russian Five, and he's also involved in a documentary about the group too. But obviously March Madness going on right now, and speaking of the madness, it is time to talk about the boatload of money that you can make this week betting at MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect time to get in the action. The madness of March is here, and you can lay down some money and score big on college hoops. I know Michigan still live, going to be playing Thursday in the Sweet 16. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners, and that's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. And MyBookie even has an in-game live betting so that you can place a bet after tip-off if you screwed up the first one like I always do. Join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. And you can even enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. And go ahead and visit MyBookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid. And look, guys, I know that this is a Pistons podcast, but I reached out to Keith Gave about the new book, and I'm excited to read it, and I'm fascinated by the story, so we had a nice long chat with him on Monday morning. But I realize this isn't about the Pistons, but I feel like there's probably a big crossover with Pistons and Red Wings fans, kind of Detroit fans in general, and given that many of us are Detroit's pro sports fans, maybe we could use a little look back at the glory days with some of those Red Wings teams that we grew up on in some ways. There's no lockdown Red Wings also, so I decided to get the interview and play it here. This won't be a super normal thing to be talking about non-Pistons Detroit sports, but it won't be the last time either. Maybe this summer we can talk about the Tigers a little bit if anything interesting is going on, or whatever else is going on in the Detroit sports landscape. So anyway, that's what's happening here. If you're not into it, and maybe you might even be upset that we're taking time on a Pistons podcast to talk a little about the Red Wings, I apologize. And if you don't listen to the end of this podcast, I understand. But it's a free podcast for you, and that's what we're doing today. So there. I felt a little bit bad about doing that, doing the interview on Monday morning. But then I watched the Pistons-Kings game late on Monday night, and I'm totally fine with it now. Wasn't the greatest moment for the NBA there out in Sacramento. But Pistons got the win on Monday night, 106-90, against those young Sacramento Kings, the first road win of the Blake Griffin era in Detroit. Blake was had 26 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists, a very good game for him. Ish Smith had 18, including two or three three-pointers. Reggie Bullock had 17 points as well, knocking down shots from long range as well. Luke Kennard, 10 points off the bench for the Pistons. Anthony Tolliver had a nice game with 12. He knocked down 3 threes off the bench. The Kings, they're very young, and they're bad right now, obviously. Bogdan Bogdanovic didn't play. He's one of their top players. Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox look to be developing into a pretty good duo there. De'Aaron Fox doing some nice things for them, and Buddy Hield being a nice scorer for them offensively, picked up in the DeMarcus Cousins trade last February. Also, rookie Justin Jackson from North Carolina, he played okay as well. So, you know, developing some things with the young players there. The Pistons were 14 of 29 from three-point land, 48%. I looked online, and they actually mentioned this during the Portland broadcast. that I was watching, but the Pistons are sixth in the NBA in three-point shooting, which is kind of hard to believe. You might think that if they were sixth in the NBA coming into the season that they'd have a really good record. Obviously, the record now 8 games under .500, not very good. Obviously, a lot of that percentage is due to the work that Tobias Harris was doing earlier in the season when he was with Detroit. But like I said, wouldn't have picked Detroit to have the record they do if you knew that three-point percentage coming in. But Sacramento doesn't play a lot of defense, which is obviously apparent from watching the game last night. You like to think that the young tanking team would be at least be playing aggressive defense like Atlanta does, the Hawks and Mike Budenholzer. They're kind of developing a culture down there. Sacramento just kind of looks like the same old stuff. Although, like I said, some of those offensive players, those young players are developing offensively under Coach Dave Yeager, and he's a much more stable coach than they've had over the past few, although the organization struggles with their ownership situation with Vivek there, making some puzzling decisions, and a team that's a mess. It's the Siberia of the NBA, as I've said before. The Pistons now 6 full games behind the Milwaukee Bucks, who are in the 8th place in the Eastern Conference with 12 to play. Only 4 of the remaining games for the Pistons of those 12 are against teams with winning records. So, meanwhile, Milwaukee has a bit of a tough schedule, and Detroit has the tiebreaker against them. So if you think that there's some way that the Pistons can make up 6 games in the last 12, then we'll see. If you think like an 11-1 finish or something like that is possible, I don't. I think the season's over, obviously, and most all you do, I'm sure, that are listening. But that's the facts if you want them. Pistons now 6.5 games behind Miami. The Heat sitting 7th in the Eastern Conference. The Pistons resume action with a back-to-back tonight in Phoenix before closing the 6-game road trip with the presumptive favorites, possibly, in the NBA with the Houston Rockets on the road. 10 o'clock game in Phoenix tonight. The Suns have lost 18 of 19, the worst record in the league, so I guess you can call them the tank champs right now. Tonight, Devin Booker and TJ Warren, their 2 top scorers, are expected to miss the game with what I'm very sure are serious injuries that they are nursing right now. Detroiter Josh Jackson, the rookie out of Kansas, is going nuts lately. He had 36 against Golden State the other day, averaging 17.3 points and 6.2 rebounds and 1.8 assists per game in his last 20. So a nice rookie season being put together by the Detroiter there. We're going to be talking to Keith Gave, former Detroit Free Press writer, about his new book about the Russian Five of Detroit Red Wings fame. Looking forward to sharing that one with you guys. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons, which is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So our rates are reasonable, and email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And we are now being joined by Keith Gave, former Detroit Free Press hockey writer for the Red Wings. Keith, thanks for taking the time to join us here on Locked On Pistons.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
And the book is called The Russian Five, a story of espionage, defection, bribery, and courage. The book being released today all over the place. You can catch it on Amazon, IndieBound.org, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, eBay, all over the place. I'm excited to read it. I've been reading the excerpts in the Free Press. How long have you known that there would be a book?
Well, to be honest, I knew there was a book from the beginning. I just didn't know when I was going to write it. I stayed pretty busy. I stayed in the newspaper business until about 2001, and then I transitioned over to academia and taught journalism and English in a couple colleges here in Michigan. And I was busy, too busy to really devote all my time that I needed to writing this thing. And you know, I retired a couple of years ago and had the time and just decided to sit down and crank this thing out. Now, another thing happened at that about the same time that I decided I needed to write this thing. I got a call from a director, young documentary film director, Joshua Reel, who was interested in making a film about the Russian Five, and asked me if I would be, since I was intimate with the story, I knew the story, if I was interested in helping him as a producer and writer create this documentary film. And I also knew that this would be a good time for me to go back and kind of revisit a lot of the main characters, the Russian players, a lot of the wings, Scotty Bowman, Jim Devolano, the former general manager, Jim Leitz, the former executive vice president who orchestrated the early defections and so on that I was involved in. And, by re-interviewing them in front of the camera to make this documentary film, I also had what I needed to kind of flesh out chapters of the book. And I kind of wrote the book while we were making the film.
And that, like you mentioned, the film also coming out soon called The Russian Five, which will open on April 11th at the Fillmore in downtown Detroit as part of the Freep Film Festival. Keith, it's such a fascinating story. You mentioned how you were involved in some of the early defections. Now, most of us, we went to college. I went to Central Michigan. You started a small paper. Maybe you work your way up to a big beat someday. You had a little bit different experience professionally before starting in the newspaper game. What kind of made you uniquely qualified to write about the Red Wings during these days?
Well, I really don't know the answer to that, but I did have a unique path. Excuse me. There's my dog saying hello.
Hey, no problem. We love the pups here.
Get a little sound elements in this thing. Listen, I spent 6 years in the Army as a Russian linguist, and I went to Russian language school. I was drafted during the Vietnam War, and I didn't really want to go to Vietnam, so I looked for something else I might be able to do to serve the country, since I was going to have to go. It's what 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds, I had a couple years of college at the time, but I got drafted and I had to go in the military or go to Canada. I signed up for 4 years instead of 2 years of being drafted, and the Army sent me to Russian language school in Monterey, California. I spent a year there, 6 hours a day, 5 days a week studying Russian. And I got through that, and they sent me to an intelligence school. We call it a spy school, and I spent 6 months there. And then I went to West Berlin when the city was divided by the Berlin Wall, and I spent 3 years there kind of eavesdropping, monitoring on the Russians, doing the kinds of things that the NSA does. I worked for the NSA. And so I spent 6 years in the Army. I got out of the service. I went to graduate school at Michigan State University. Thought I would maybe get another degree or two in Russian and teach the language somewhere. But, of course, Americans don't speak other languages. We don't speak Russian for sure because it's a hard language. So there aren't many teaching jobs. I figured that out pretty quickly, and I decided to take a shot at some journalism classes. So I figured I might be able to use my language skills as a newsman one day, maybe in Moscow. Well, I took some journalism classes, probably three or four classes. I saw a part-time job posted on a bulletin board outside of my journalism classes, and got a part-time job at the Lansing State Journal. I was, the Friday night prep crew, the group of mostly guys then, who'd sit around on Friday nights, answer the phones when the coaches would call in with the stats and the results of their high school football games, and write those little one or two paragraph stories that wound up in Saturday morning's newspaper. That's how I got my start in newspaper business. Worked at the State Journal, did that for a little while. The State Journal hired me as a city desk reporter, and I spent 3 years there, went to the AP Chicago, wound up at the Detroit Free Press. I spent a year at the Free Press on the city desk, and then a couple of jobs opened up at the Free Press. Two jobs at the same time, the NHL job and the NBA job. And I threw my name in the hat with, I'm sure, hundreds of other people at the time. This would have been in the summer of 1985. And the sports editor at the Free Press at the time, Dave Robinson, interviewed me and ultimately offered me the job of covering the Detroit Red Wings in the NHL for the Free Press. And I did that for a lot of years. And it was during that time they were building a team. And it was slow going. They seemed to reach a plateau of, 4 or 5 years after drafting Steve Yzerman. They knew they had to build around him, find more players. They knew those players were in the behind the Iron Curtain in Russia, the Red Army Club and all those other great clubs over there. So the Wings they made history, really. They started drafting Russian hockey players, drafting them early in the draft. They drafted Sergei Fedorov in the fourth round in 1989. One round after they drafted Nick Lidstrom in the third round, but they drafted Sergei in the fourth round, Vladimir Konstantinov in the 11th round, and you know, had two pretty good young rushes. All they had to do is figure out how to get them over over the Iron Curtain and into Detroit, into a Red Wings uniform, and start winning games and maybe winning the Stanley Cups. And that's where I came in.
That's where you came in and had the most interesting way of communicating to Sergei Fedorov what might be in store for him over in Detroit.
Well, yeah, what really kind of surprised me, because I had no idea this was coming at all. But, you know, a few weeks after the draft, Jim Leitz, Mike Ilitch's son-in-law, who was the executive vice president of the Wings at the time, he ran the business, invited me to lunch in the middle of summer. Now, I never heard from Jim Leitz ever. Unless he was angry about something that I wrote in the Free Press. And I hadn't written anything in a while because it was summertime. And anyways, we had lunch at the Elwood Cafe across the street from Woodward Avenue in Detroit, across the street from the Fox Theater. And basically said, here's I wanted to talk to you about. You know, you speak Russian. You know, we drafted these Russian players. We're wondering if you might go over to Helsinki, Finland. We found out that the Soviets are having their training camp over in Finland. They're playing a game in Helsinki. We thought maybe with your NHL credentials, you could go over there and kind of interview these guys. And while you're interviewing them, maybe you could pass along a message for us that we'd like them to fact. And we'll help them in any way we can to come over to the United States, to Detroit, to play hockey. And I kind of put my hands in a timeout situation. I said, Jim, what are you talking about? There's no way I could do that. I work for the Detroit Free Press, and, you know, I cover your hockey team. I can't be doing you any favors that, you know, that really wouldn't be ethical. And he said, well, we're prepared to pay a lot of money. And he mentioned a number, and it was six figures. It was for a guy on a meager sports writer salary. It was almost, I would call it life changing money. And I just shook my head and said, there's no way I can do this. I'm really sorry. And that was kind of the end of it. And, but you know, I thought about it and probably talked to my wife and I said, you know, there might be a way I can do this. So I called Leitz back and I said, here's the deal. I won't take a dime from the Detroit Red Wings. I don't want anything. I'll pay my own expenses, but this is kind of I'm intrigued. I am intrigued. You know, I worked in the spy business for 6 years and never had a chance to do anything like this at all. And I said, here's the deal. I'll do it. All I want from you in return is I want the stories first. When Sergei comes over here, when Vladdy comes over here, I want the stories first for the readers of the Detroit Free Press. I want to be the first one to interview them. I want to be the first at everything. I want first and total access, you know. And he said, deal. And a few days later, I was on my way to Helsinki, where I wound up meeting Sergei Fedorov and Vladimir Konstantinov after this hockey game, and they played the Soviet national team played an exhibition game against the Finnish team in a little arena there, and I was able to find a promoter who got me down toward the dressing room, and I stood outside the dressing room, and they brought these two guys out to me. Dripping wet out of the shower, they had white towels wrapped around their waist, and they wondered what the heck they're doing out there having to talk to me. They're dripping wet, and I noticed a guy down the a few steps away, probably 6 or 8 feet, kind of looking over, watching every move and listening in on everything we were saying. And I'm sure that he was their KGB type guy, the guy who made sure that nobody defected, that all these players went back home to the Soviet Union when they were done with this little training camp in Finland. That was a little bit of a nervous time for me, I should say a real nervous time. I really didn't know what to expect, but I noticed, I could figure out right away that these guys weren't prepared to do an interview, even though I had my little reporter's notebook out and everything. And I basically said, okay, here, you know, let me just give you these things I brought you. And I will maybe telephone you and we'll do a formal interview another time. I gave him little Red Wings pins, business cards from Jim Leitz, Jim DeVolano, Jacques Demers was the coach at the time, my own business card. I'm giving them all this stuff. And I showed Sergei the list of the Detroit Red Wings drafted players in that 1989 draft. I said, Sergei, there's your name right there. See number 4 overall right there. And he looked at me like, you know, just kind of shrugged the shoulders and no emotion at all. Nothing. Like, this guy would be a pretty good card player, right? And then I showed Vladdy his name, number 11. There you are, Vladimir Konstantinov. There you are right there. Vladdy was kind of dancing around and smiling like the kid who got a shiny blue bike for Christmas. So it was kind of neat to see his reaction. Anyways, I had these letters that I had written to these guys. I wrote letters in Russian on the plane over, and I basically outlined who the Detroit Red Wings were, what they were doing, that they were drafted by the Wings, that the Wings really wanted to come over to help them, and we used the word defect, to defect or come over in any way to play for the Detroit Red Wings. They're prepared to pay you. They were willing to pay them the same amount of money that they paid Steve Yzerman at the time. That's how much they valued these guys. And also, and this is key, as long as you are a Detroit Red Wing, we will pay your family $25,000 a year, which is huge money. It was at the time in Russia, in the Soviet Union. Anyways, I wrote these letters, and I stuffed them in these little media guides for each player. I gave it to them, and I was a little nervous because they weren't hitting particularly well. And I noticed Sergei kind of looking down, thumbing through his book, and he sees the little letter that I put in there and kind of quietly closed it up and put it behind his back. And that's when I knew it was time for me to get out of there. I shook their hands. I said, you know, in Russian, I said, it was great meeting you, talking with you. Best of luck to you. We'll see you in the future, I hope. And said goodbye, and I left. And that's sum total of my role in that whole thing. And I got the heck out of there. And it was probably 10 months later, I think in July of, maybe 11 months later, July of 1990, I'm eating dinner at my home, and again, nothing's going on, no hockey again, that being that time of year. My telephone rings out of the blue, and it's Jim Leitch. I said, Keith? And I said, yeah, this is Jim Leitch. I said, hi, Jim, how you doing? He said, well, I'm on Mr. Ilitch's plane, and I'm flying back from Portland, Oregon, and guess who's sitting next to me? And I said, who's that? He said, Sergei Fedorov. Said, get out your notebook. And so I shoved my plate away, got my notebook out, took a bunch of notes, and fired up my laptop computer and wrote a story that was in the Detroit Free Press the next morning. Page one above the fold, Soviet hockey player defects to come play for the Red Wings. And that was my role in that story. And, of course, a year or so later, Vladimir Konstantinov came over, same thing. We had the story first. I interviewed them first and had a pretty good relationship with all the Russians because I could speak the language. It served me well, especially when Scotty put all five together and they started winning the Stanley Cups.
That Portland, Oregon trip that those guys made almost had a little bit of a hiccup at the very end with Sergei trying to leave his club.
It scared the heck out of Jim Leitch, because Jim was there at the Shiloh Inn in Portland. He was sitting behind a newspaper waiting for Sergei to, you know, get off the bus and join him and get out to the limo and head to the airport. But just as they were leaving, a guy comes out of they're passing the elevators. The elevator doors open up, and this guy comes out. And said, "Oh, Sergei, good. I'm, you know, let's go to have dinner." And Sergei said, "No, I can't have dinner. I'm leaving." He goes, "Leaving where? Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to Detroit." "What do you mean you're going to Detroit? Come on, let's go have dinner and talk about it." And Leitch is standing there, like, "What the heck is going on? Am I losing this guy now?" It turns out it was Sergei's roommate, but he wasn't a player. He was a team equipment guy and massage therapist, whose name is Sergei. His name is Sergei too. Chekmarov. That guy today is the Detroit. He works for the Detroit Red Wings as a equipment guy and a massage therapist. Wow. But anyways, Sergei finally was able to. He reached in his pocket and he took all of his money, and remembers it to be like about $1,500. His entire life savings for playing about 3 years of professional hockey in Soviet Union. Takes all of his money and he gives it to this guy. Says, "Here, you take this. I'll see you down the road." And Sergei wound up leaving with lights, and you know, they got back in the limo. Now the limo driver is waiting out there, and he's got Nick Polano, who was the assistant general manager at the time, and a guy who was a running mate with lights, who helped orchestrate these infections. Polano, you know, was very involved in it. Polano and an interpreter, two guys. Nick is really nervous in the back of this limo. Now, if you know Nick Polano, he looks like he's straight out of The Sopranos. You know, big tall Italian-looking guy with a big head of hair and so on. And the limo driver says, "Hey, look, buddy, I don't want any trouble here. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I don't want any trouble." Nick, the way Nick tells the story, he's really funny. In the we interviewed him for the movie, for the film. This guy, he said he thought we were going to whack somebody. The limo driver, he said, "I don't want any trouble. I don't want any trouble." You know, lights got in the car and said, "Look, nothing bad is happening. I'll give you an extra $100 tip if you just, you know, get us to the airport as quickly as possible." You know, he got in with Sergey, and, you know, Portland's a relatively, it's a smaller town. It was a quick drive to the airport. And lights and Polano think they had Sergey back in Detroit at home in Jim Light's Bloomfield Hills home before the Russians even realized he was gone.
If there was going to be any trouble, they probably would have bought Kosher or Probert back then or something.
Yeah, you bet.
Now, are the guys, the players, and are they, do they get together any more now? I know Vladdy's in the Detroit area still. There's a little present day in the book that kind of catches us up to the guys being?
The end of the book kind of deals with, where are they now? What are they doing now? And so on. And all these guys are getting on with their lives and doing pretty well. I mean, you're right. Vladdy lives year round in Ann Arbor, lives with his physical therapist, gets 24/7 care and training. And he joined the other four at Comerica Park for the Winter Classic game. Remember when the Wings alumni played the Toronto Maple Leafs alumni? The Russian Five were together again on the ice, and you know, a lot of pictures and so on. That was a really, really, really cool moment. In fact, that's where I was there with the film guys, and introduced the film people to each of the Russian, well, not Vladdy, but the other four at Comerica Park. That's where we got all those guys to kind of sign on to the idea of making this movie and sitting down with us at some point and to be interviewed and so on. But three of the guys went back are back in Russia right now. Slavov-Tisov, who was always kind of politically motivated, is, you know, served for many years as a minister of sport in Russia, I should say now, and presently serves as a senator in the Russian parliament. And he and Putin, Vladimir Putin, are very, very close, as a matter of fact. And Slava Kozlov, whose father was a career coach, when we talked to Slava, we were there spent about 3 weeks there in December 2015 to catch up with all these guys. But Slava Kozlov, whose father was a career coach, is in coaching himself now. He said, I made a promise to my father that when I was done playing, that I would commit to coaching and try and give something back to the game like he did his entire life. And so Slava is probably in his third year now as the assistant coach of Spartak, one of the elite league teams over there in the Continental Hockey League. And Sergei Fedorov, of course, wound up back as general manager of the Red Army team that he defected from, which I thought always got a kick out of. Sergei was, you know, ran that hockey club, and Igor Larionov stayed back in Detroit and is a player agent. He represents players, a lot of players from Russia and elsewhere. He's getting a pretty good agent's business going. So all four of those guys are doing well. And Vladimir Konstantinov is recovering every day and getting better, you know, from that terrible accident that ended his career 6 days after the Wings won that Stanley Cup in 1997.
Yeah, the night of my brother's senior prom. I'll never forget that.
In
Royal Oak on Woodward Avenue there. Keith Gave, just amazing stories from the book. I bet Fetisov could be his own documentary and own book with his connection to the Red Army and Miracle on Ice and all that stuff too.
No question about it. And I say this frequently. Each of these five guys, every one of them, could be their own feature, like documentary or feature film. I really think every one of them have amazing stories. But you know, Fetisov, Larionov, very much the same way. These guys, these old Russians, they stood up to the regime, that powerful regime, against Gushin, the general manager, and Tikhonov, the coach, in the Red Army. I mean, after the wall fell, the Iron Curtain fell, and so on. There was still a very much an iron curtain around that hockey organization. They were going to make sure, even though all the other citizens in the former Soviet Union were beginning to travel freely and come and go as they wanted to in and out of the country and so on, not so for the players. It was really, really hard for them to gain their freedom. And Larionov and Fetisov stood up to those guys and really helped kick down the iron curtain around that Red Army hockey program. Those guys have amazing stories. I think Vladimir Konstantinov's story is absolutely incredible. When you read the book, you'll see what I mean. But this guy had to fake cancer to get out of his army contract.
Oh, wow.
He was an officer in the army. He had to fake cancer to get out of the army first, because you can't leave the country. You can't just go AWOL, which is what he would have been able to do. And he really wouldn't have been able to get a work permit in the United States if he had deserted his army duties. So they had to get him out of the army. The Wings spread a lot of money around to a lot of doctors, not just money. One of those doctors that needed a bribe to say that Vladimir had a rare form of cancer that was going to kill him, that they couldn't fix. There was no known cure for it. Well, one of those doctors wanted the biggest American car they made, and so the Wings got a hold of a big old Chevrolet Caprice, big old boat of a car, and bought it brand new, shipped it over there, gave it to the doctor, and he wound up signing off. And they wound up having to bribe two teams of doctors, including a group of military doctors, because the Red Army general manager Gushin didn't believe the first set of doctors, and anyways, took a lot, but Vladimir finally got released from the army because of his cancer, and then he was getting ready to come over to the U.S. and they closed the airport right when he was ready to come over with his family. They closed the airport because they had an attempted coup. The hardline communists wanted their country back, and that's the for those who were paying attention to the time, that's the time when Boris Yeltsin, then the president of the country, stood up on tanks and kind of defied the other tanks. The Russian military was there to try and kind of take back the country, and he wound up winning. But the airport was still closed, so they had to. Vladimir and his wife wound up doing was taking a train to Budapest, and that's where Budapest, Hungary, and that's where Lights, and Mike Ilitch's airplane flew over with some high-priced attorneys, and they were there about the same time that Vladimir and his wife and his agents, I guess you'd call him. He was the guy who helped kind of orchestrate. The three of them wound up in Budapest and flew home on Mike Ilitch's airplane from there. But it's just an absolutely fascinating story.
Thus began Vladdy's career, which we'll never know what could have happened with his short career in the NHL and was headed to the heights of Lidstrom or maybe even better.
He was right up there. We know this. I know this. If he would have stayed healthy, they would have won another two or three Stanley Cups. I have no doubt about that. They had another young defenseman, Yuri Fisher, coming about the same time. That team would have been great defensively for a long, long time. And we probably, Nick Lidstrom wouldn't won all those seven Norris trophies. That Vladdy would have won some of them, or the two of them may have split enough votes so that other guys on other teams might have won some of those Norris trophies. But if you remember, Vladimir Konstantinov was the runner up in the Norris Trophy balloting that year. He lost to Brian Leetch of the New York Rangers, but he was one of the best defensemen in the NHL. Before he got hurt. They win their first Stanley Cup in 1997 after 42 years, and the party really gets going. 1.2 million people on Woodward Avenue, and 6 years later, 6 days later, a limo driver falls asleep and crashes a limo into a tree on Woodward Avenue, and the party ends pretty abruptly. And you're right. We'll never know.
Yeah. So many compelling stories, just emotions all over the place with that group. And then you throw in the political mix, just a lot of interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to reading it. The Russian Five, a story of espionage, defection, bribery, and courage. Keith Gave, former Detroit Free Press, Red Wings, and NHL writer. And then, of course, the Russian Five documentary, which will open up on April 11th at the Fillmore Detroit downtown as part of the Freep Film Festival. Keith, we got some Red Wings fans listening now. Give us a little bit of hope about what they can do to turn this around and what kind of, I mean, is it going to go find another area of the world to smuggle some players over, or what are they going to have to do to turn this thing around?
Well, that's the thing. It's going to be harder now. It's going to be harder than it was even 15 years ago. I mean, the Red Wings kind of established the way teams scout Europe these days. They had so much success over there that teams started putting more and more resources in Europe. I mean, even in the early 2000s, the Wings were still ahead of the curve with getting Henrik Zetterberg in the sixth round. They got Pavel Datsyuk in the seventh round. I mean, you just can't do that anymore. Every team now has five or six scouts in Europe. Detroit had five or six scouts over there, 20 years ago. You know, they were scouring Europe and finding these players. They had Jonathan Erickson, has had a pretty good career in Detroit. Was like an 11th round or 12th round draft pick. You know, late round, one of the last guys picked in the draft. The Wings scout, they have really, really good scouts over there, but so does everybody else. So it's harder to find those diamonds in the rough anymore because other teams know about them. And listen, this is going to take a long time. We were really, really lucky in Detroit to see a team make the playoffs 25 straight years. In those 25 years, they won a lot of playoff series, a lot of playoff games, won four Stanley Cups, lost in the finals a couple other times. They gave us a pretty good run. They did something that we will never see again. In this age of a parity now in the NHL, with a salary cap, we're never going to see a team make the playoffs 25 years in a row. It's not going to happen. And, the part of the problem for the Wings is, when you play so well for so long, you're not drafting in the bottom, three or four or five, like Pittsburgh did all those years and Edmonton and other Tampa Bay Lightning, for a long time. Some of the better teams now, it takes a while toward the bottom, feeding on the bottom for a while, draft picks to build a team that's going to compete. The Wings are just there now. Ken Holland, if you put a gun to his head, will tell you that he probably should have started this rebuilding process a couple of years ago. He was a little bit stubborn. He traded away assets, good young players who are playing well for other teams right now, should be in Detroit, but he traded them away, sometimes with draft picks, to get players to either help get them in the playoffs or maybe help them win a playoff series. And it didn't happen. And so it's happening now. The Wings are going to finish in the bottom four or five in the league this year. They're going to get a pretty good player. If they get a fourth overall player, they should get a pretty good player. Steve Eisen was drafted fourth overall. You don't have to get the best player in the draft, like a Sidney Crosby or a Connor McDavid, but it helps if you do. You can turn a team around fast that way. But the Wings are going to – this is going to be a – honestly, you asked me to give people hope. If they could turn this thing in 5 years – around in 5 years, that's good. That's really good. I'm looking at 6, 7, 8 years maybe before they get this thing turned around and really seriously competing for Stanley Cups again. It's going to take a while, and that's just the way the NHL is today.
And the bad news is we got other Detroit sports teams that are going on similar rebuilds themselves, with the Tigers and maybe the Pistons as well, kind of stuck in the middle. And the Lions, I think, are about 50 years into their rebuild. So,
you know, it's going to be a quiet April with the Wings and the Pistons not there, and the Tigers probably not having a real good team. But you know what? Things are cyclical. They're all going to turn around. The Pistons are doing some good things too. I think they made a pretty big trade for a pretty big player to build around, and it's just a matter of making it happen. I think again, I was fortunate enough to cover those Bad Boys teams a little bit with Porky Meineke at the Free Press, and I see what this team is, what this town is like when the Pistons are rolling too, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we get behind our teams when they get rolling, yep, in the right direction. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. And the books got signings coming up in Okemos, Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, Traverse City, Cadillac, and Petoskey. All the information for those can be found on the website at keithgave.com. Keith, hey, I want to thank you for taking the time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
The great Keith Gave. Thanks again to him for joining us. Check out keithgave.com for information on the book and the documentary, book signings, all that good stuff as well. But remember to check out mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% bonus to match whatever you put into your account there. Michigan Wolverines still alive in March Madness, so if you've got a feeling on those games, maybe you want to put some action on it as well. But join us tomorrow for Locked On Pistons, as we'll be talking about the game tonight late against the Phoenix Suns, and I will have a look at the Grand Rapids Drive. I'm heading down to that game on Tuesday to check them out against the Windy City Bulls. And although the Pistons aren't going for a playoff spot right now, although I guess they technically are, the Grand Rapids Drive certainly are right in the mix for the G League. So I'll talk about the G League experience, try to track down some of the figures with the team, hopefully Kay Felder, and tell you what it's like to go to a G League game. So it should be fun. It'll be my first time going to one of those as well. Give us a follow on the Locked On NBA Network at Locked On NBA on Twitter. And also give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matchuk. So thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks again to Keith Gave. And we'll talk to you all again soon.